Welcome to Put Simply, the podcast that puts what's happening in the world simply without compromising on the details. Adam Koch is my name, Ozan Ibrahim and Rodney McCune are my co-hosts. Gents, wonderful to see you both again.
Likewise.
Once in a week just feels special, Adam.
Well, it is special indeed because today we celebrate something that is non-politics, which, Ozan, I think you're probably happy not to be discussing politics on this show for a change.
I am indeed. I mean, we missed out on the Oscars, so we'll have to get on to the next best thing.
We will. Well, we thought we'd do a special podcast and a non-politics podcast. So today we are banned from referring to anything politics, definitely anything Donald Trump and anything elections or anything like that, because it is the eve of the 8th of March where we celebrate International Women's Day, and we have a very special guest joining us today. Rodney, give us the context to our guest, and then please introduce her.
It's a privilege. I'm delighted to introduce Jane Chan, who is widely recognised as Singapore's finest rugby player, male or female. And she obviously plays for the Singapore National Sevens team. She's very kindly gives her time to inspire young kids at a rugby club that I'm involved in, Singapore Irish. She's a wonderful female coach and role model for mixed gender club that we are, and hugely inspiring. And it's no surprise that having someone like Jane involved in the coaching has made a huge contribution to us having one of the highest numbers of female players, if not the highest, in Singapore. So yes, Jane, wonderful rugby player, wonderful coach, inspires a lot of kids to take up the sport, and I guess challenges, well, Jane will know better from her own experience, but challenges perception of what maybe historically used to be called a male sport, Jane?
Yeah, pretty much. Wasn't until quite recently, maybe less than like 20, 30 years ago, I think that's where we first started having a women's team in Singapore, started by, of course, the older rugby players. And then they just kind of kept this running all over Singapore. And slowly it became, you know, like a national team as well. And then they used to wear old male passed-down jerseys from the men's side to just go up and play competitions. And I think they only had like one competition a year that they trained for back then. And now with, you know, how involved we are in the national side with the women's and the men's, we train for multiple competitions in a year. I think that's also a privilege here in Singapore as well, yeah.
And in terms of stuff coming up in the next, I guess, 1 to 2 years, you've got the competition in the next couple of months, which is that the SEA Games?
Yeah, and so the next, the most recent one that's going to happen is called the C7s, which is going to be happening in Singapore. Usually that is like a mini SEA Games per se. So we'll get the Southeast Asian countries to come in and we'll get to play in the finals if we do get in the national stadium. But the main one is usually the SEA Games, which happens every 2 years. And then next year we do have the Asian Games again. That's happening in Japan, if I'm not wrong. And we are still involved in the Asia Rugby 7 Series. So we're trying to prepare ourselves this year. I think it's quite a load leading up to SEA Games in December, because I think we have high hopes on actually getting a podium in 2025, yeah.
Jane, it's a great pleasure to have you, and thank you for being a part of our kind of pre-International Women's Day episode. I wanted to just get your views as someone who plays elite women's sports. I know, for example, 15, 20 years ago, the football or the soccer, that I follow probably more closer than rugby, women's sport was very much secondary. Women's soccer was very much secondary to the men's game, etc. And I think, you know, having followed it very closely over the last 5-10 years and watching a number of these World Cups, Women's World Cups, etc., it's so great to see the women's sport getting to such a high standard. As someone who plays elite sport, How have you seen that, and what hope does that give you? And, you know, what do you tell the people that you coach and the young girls that you're playing with about where we could be in perhaps 10 years' time?
Well, for Singapore, I think it's just sometimes you do see and you do hear firsthand that, you know, why are you playing such a manly sport in the first place, right? But I always tell my kids, I mean, the ones that I usually coach, doesn't matter whether they are a woman or they're female or male, I said, you decide who you want to be, who and what you want to put out there, right? We as players, we want to develop ourselves, and obviously technical wise, skills wise, we want to be highest in the league, right? But how are you going to be as a player?
Yeah.
Like your character, your personality, what do you want to put on the pitch? You're not just doing this for just you, but what about the people that come after you? I think with that being said, like with the national team, with the women's as well, it's always like, it's not just when we put on the jersey, it's not just for us, it's for the people back at home and the people who came before us and the people who are going to come after us. I think that takes a lot of, that it's a lot of pride putting on the Singapore jersey, just because, like, you know, it's a privilege now that we have, first of all, our own equipment. We have locations to train, you know, we have everything covered when we go out for competitions and all that. I think, it's definitely different from the stories that I've heard from ex-coaches or ex-players that, you know, they were always, I would like to say, a bit less privileged compared to us now. But I'm seeing that it will go maybe 5 to 10 years will be, I hope that we are at least second in Southeast Asia and probably top five in Asia. Hopefully that's the case. I think we're steering into the right direction because recently Paul Tidgins came into the Singapore Rugby Union as a head coach. He oversees both men's and women's, primarily coaching the men's, but he oversees the women's quite a bit. And, you know, like the way that he puts his programs out, the way that he interacts with us, the way that he runs things, I think we do have high hopes on achieving quite a number of things in the next couple of years. We're just trying to adjust as much as we can. We're trying to bring in a lot more young blood on the women's side, especially because the population for rugby women in Singapore itself is already very low. I think we have maybe 200 or less than 200 women's players in Singapore alone, across the whole country, across all the clubs. So I think it's good that we are trying to keep the community going. We still have a lot of older girls playing, which is great, even at a club level. And we're trying to bring in young blood from other sports or at any age where they are trying out rugby to, you know, stay in the community and like keep the sport growing as well. Yeah.
So Jane, you spoke a lot about some of the historical struggles that women before, I guess, your generation faced. But can you tell us a little bit about your story? What made you want to get into rugby? And also, how does your sort of current life, I guess, look? I you know, we know that obviously rugby is not your full-time job necessarily. How does that sort of structure play out?
This is quite tricky, right? Because rugby for us in Singapore, we are not like fully paid athletes, but say that we have a salary. So everyone kind of has their full-time job, whatever they want to work as, right? So I'm primarily a financial analyst by day. And then I'm an athlete by night, I guess. And then I coach on the weekends or whenever I have time with Rodney at Singapore Irish as well. So my weeks are pretty packed because we train about 5 times a week alongside with work, coaching and family and friends. I think a lot of sacrifice comes in when you want to play at a higher level, especially when you're not being paid. You kind of have to also put your focus into your job because that's what kind of brings in the money. At the end of the day, rugby can't put food on the table as of now, but hopefully in time to come, maybe 10, 20 years later, when, you know, the sporting culture in Singapore grows, that can be a possibility as well. But yeah, primarily a financial analyst that trains 5 times a week, and coaches in the weekend.
When do you find time for anything else? I mean, that's, I'm just getting tired listening to your schedule.
You kind of just learn to schedule a time in a very structured way, in a sense where I only have, let's say, for example, like Friday nights and Saturday nights and Sunday nights that is not taken by coaching or rugby training, and you kind of just prioritize what matters to you. I think it's just what I want to achieve in this current stage in my life. And having been in this for so long, you just kind of learn how to manage your time a lot better. It's a lot of sacrifice, not gonna lie. You do sacrifice a lot of time with your friends and your family, because you know, what if your friends, let's meet on Monday night, and I was just like, well, I can't, you know, I have training. But I think for me, this is what is important. And what's important for me to achieve and to build as well in this time of my life. And I think that takes a lot of precedence in my schedule, hence why I do what I do. I think it's just the passion and the love for the game and for the community. And, you know, it's just a lot of pride to put on the jersey as well. Yeah.
And what made you decide to I assume you started at a very young age, but what made you decide to play rugby and make all those sacrifices that you talk about to get to the elite level that you are?
Well, the funny thing is that before rugby, I used to play basketball. And when I was playing for school, one of my teammates like, "Hey, Jane, why not give rugby a shot? I think you kind of have the qualities in that sense." And I was 18 years old at that time. I was like, "Yeah, why not? I have all the time in the world to like try out in another sport." And I went for club training one time with my friend's club, which is also my current club still, and kind of just fell in love with the game. I just really like the physicality. I really like how much space there was compared to like basketball. It's like a smaller court, right? So I don't know, it was just, I fell in love with how physical and aggressive it is, and all these women supporting women. I've never heard about rugby prior to basketball, actually. And I think for me, I got really lucky because I started off rugby when I was 18, and not a lot of girls in Singapore start that young. Because the thing is that in Singapore, the women's side, you only can join rugby or has rugby as a curricula is only in university. So most of them start like maybe when they're 19, 20, 21. Right, but for the schools, you know, primary schools and all that, the boys start from a really young age. Unless women or like the females join a club that has like the age group, like 16, 17, 18, a lot of them actually don't start that young. So I got really lucky joining when I was 18. But my ex-national coach, somehow, she was also coaching the club that I was training for. And I think she saw something in me that I didn't at that point. And she scouted me and managed to get into the national team the same year. Yeah, but I would say that my ex-national coach was the one that kind of saw something before I could even see something in myself in this community. And she gave me a lot of opportunities that made me who I am today as a player and as a person as well. Yeah.
So basically, Jane, a wonderful coach, just inspires lots of young players. It's exactly what you're doing as on the coaching side as well. I mean, fortunately for girls in Singapore, there is opportunities now in club rugby to start much earlier than they were able to when you started, you know, right down to the age of 10 and so on, obviously. And you know, Singapore junior rugby has produced some players, albeit with some help in their teenage years elsewhere. But in the Six Nations this year, both Marcus Smith, who plays for England, started rugby in Singapore, as did I think Archie Griffith, who's in the Welsh setup. I think he was in Singapore until he was 12 or 13. I mean, are we going to see Singaporean women on a global stage? Maybe not obviously playing for other countries, but in terms of professional club rugby over the next 5 years. I mean, my expectation is that we will see Singaporean female professional rugby players within the next 5 years as the game moves in that direction. Do you think that's realistic?
Definitely. I think the question is that now that we know that, in Singapore, there's not a lot of opportunities for like a paid gig. So I think like finding opportunities elsewhere at the same time is also on the players, and also on the management team or whoever that wants to put themselves out there to play at that kind of level. I think that being said, like Rodney, and I, we mentioned about Belfast quite I think our projects in 2023, like early 2023, we talked about, having some players to go to Belfast to play for the clubs. And one of our coaches, Liana, she went to Belfast in December of 2023. And she had a couple of months in Belfast to play with the clubs. Yeah, I think that is the kind of opportunity we need for players to like go for, because then it opens their eyes to what is out there for them. I think more so than what it is already now in Singapore. Because I mean, the girls in Ireland or wherever that has a more noticeably higher level of play for rugby, they definitely have more opportunities there as well. So I think we as players also need to take charge of like where do we want to end up playing or what is our goal. If we do want to play for a higher level and it takes us to go somewhere else, to another country, maybe across the world even, to play a higher level of rugby, I think it's a really good idea. I think it's just to build your knowledge, your experience when you come back. You go back to your clubs, you share, you build relations, build network, and I think that is a crucial part of rugby as well. Yeah.
And the experience from you mentioned Liana going to Belfast, was that the standard of Singaporean national team women is more than competitive to play All Ireland League, which is a level into professional rugby in Ireland. So what we know from that is that we do have players of a high standard in Singapore. It's just making the right connections for those who might want to explore professional sport, that they get those opportunities, Jane.
Yeah, I mean, we as players have to take charge of our like growth as well, right? Like, yeah, we can have. I mean, Singapore is primarily focused a lot on sevens because a lot of the major leagues, like SEA Games and Asian Games that we participate, is all sevens, right? And that is the level that we're playing at, which is pretty good as of now. But at any point, like someone wants to pursue outside of just playing for Singapore, then yeah, definitely is something they can explore to do for sure.
Yeah, and the money in professional rugby is in 15s.
Yeah.
So it's really about someone who's got the right talent profile at the right age, going overseas potentially to make the switch to 15s and kick on from there.
Yeah. I think the thing is that in Singapore, like even though it's sevens focused, we do have club 15s leagues and stuff within the women's clubs as well. So everyone kind of has a gist of how 15s work. We may not be at the level that we are with sevens. Like if you're comparing just sevens and 15s, just the level alone, it's going to be a bit different. But I'm not saying that players who play sevens can't play 15s, and 15s players can't play sevens. I think it's quite interchangeable as well. So it's just really finding the right opportunity and the right connections to put yourself in that position to just play at a high level.
Coming back to your role as a coach, Jane, what's, I guess, some of the things that you try to impart in the young girls that you do coach as a successful woman in the rugby space, which, as you've said, has so traditionally been male dominated. What's some of the things that you try to make sure that you teach them and that they learn from you?
I think for me as a coach, I emphasize a lot on their values and morals and the sportsmen they want to become, because technicalities and skills can be trained. It's just a lot of practice. You just got to put in the hours and repetition. But when it comes down to, values, doing the right thing when no one is watching, if someone scores you on the field, do you want to retaliate? What do you want to show yourself as? Like, what kind of sportsman do you want to be? Right? It's very easy to cut corners. Everyone likes to cut corners, right? Because it's just easier. Nobody want like they don't. Some of them don't understand the emphasis of putting in the hard work before you get the results. But what I instill in my kids that I coach is that put in the hard work. It may not work out in the perfect scenario, but it's what you put out as a player and what kind of effort you want to give and what kind of commitment you want to give to see the results at the end of the day. There's a lot of things that that we can't control sometimes. It's like, frustrations on the field, anger, emotions itself, you can't really control, right? Referees, you can't control. Weather, you cannot control. You can't control your opponents as well. But what you can control is how you react. What do you do after? Things like that. I think it for kids, especially at the age now, at 12, 13 years old, it's very easy to retaliate. They're old enough as well. They're becoming teenagers, right? But for me, whenever I speak to them one to one or whenever they have frustrations, it's okay, then so what are you going to do about it next? So it's a lot of just guiding because they kind of already know what they want in a sense, but they just need people, someone to like guide them along the way and lead them into the right direction. And I feel like as a coach, that's a lot of my job is to help them pave the way in the right direction for them. You can be the best player in the world, but with unsportsmanlike behavior, then is if that's the player you want to be, then fine. But for me, it's more of like, who do you actually want to be outside of just like a rugby player? So building values and morals and a work ethic is something that I emphasize a lot with my kids, because rugby is a really demanding sport, right? Where as they get older, people also get bigger, people get stronger, people get faster. So if you have the right work ethic from the get-go and the right mindset, then you when you grow up and you try to pursue into like maybe a professional career in rugby, then you already start off at, with a very strong base of like the right mindset and the right attitude to go forward and pursue at a high level. So I think that for me as a coach is something that I emphasize a lot on.
In terms of, I know that obviously children playing sport, rugby, or any other sport has enormous benefits. But what have you seen, for example, in some of the students that you coach, particularly young girls, what type of positive things have you seen in their life off the field? And what have you experienced as a woman playing competitive sports? What type of positive, impact has it had on your off the field life, whether it's your professional career or personal life? Can you go into a little bit of these?
I think in general, the rugby community, even though you guys are not playing the same team or even from the same country, everyone is always very welcoming. There's no right size, right height, whatever it is, you can be any kind of person and you'd be playing rugby, right? And I think what I've seen, especially at the international level, everyone's kind of friends, everyone's very friendly. It's always a privilege to be playing at a high level, for example, because we've been to quite a number of international competitions, but everyone has the same goal in mind, right? Is to win games, to put out their best and to just do their best and represent the country or the club that they're playing for. But it's never really anything unsportsmanlike. Off the field, you guys say hi, make friends, you build connections. I think that aspect of it is really nice on the international level because everyone's adults, right? So it kind of just brings everyone tighter and we are just doing it for the same cause. Doesn't in other countries they are also advocating for women in rugby or women in sports in general, and it's the same for how it is in Singapore. We want to bring the community up, we want to keep it rolling and constantly bringing in young blood so that we are able to grow the community. But I think with the kids, it's especially the girls, I think, and because they're playing in a mixed category sometimes, the boys do realize that the girls can sometimes do better than them. And it's really nice to see that the girls also recognize on their own that, hey, like, I can actually do whatever these boys are doing. And just because I'm a girl doesn't mean that I'm gonna back down and not take, let's say, a bigger boy on. And I think it builds their character. They build good relationships off the field because they know what it takes to get on the pitch, right? And they usually translate that back to off the field with how they talk to people, how they treat people, how they handle themselves. I think that builds a really good culture as well. I think same goes for the women's side. Like we understand how much effort and sacrifice it takes to and privilege to be in this position. When we are off the field, it's like everyone just understands each other without even having to say anything because we are kind of in the same position. So we are kind of constantly lifting each other up, not in a way that we want to put anyone down just for a spot, but constantly pushing boundaries, pushing limits on and off the field. Yeah.
We talked about Leanna going to Belfast, and that was maybe an unusual example. But and you talked about the rugby communities in other countries that you connect with and engage with. I mean, over the last 6 months or 12 months, you know, what sort of places would you have been to play rugby, or would have been playing in competitions?
I think the last couple of months, I was in Japan in February with my club BAC. We were in Fukuoka to play competitions against the Japanese clubs, and that was really quite an experience. It was sevens, playing this was freezing, it was snowing a little bit. That was really good because the level was really high. And then last year in end of November, I was in Dubai with Tropic Sevens to play for the Dubai Sevens invite not invite international team. So that one was a bit different because every one of my teammates are from different parts of the world. So I had some Australians, I had some people from Scotland, France, New Zealand, I think Swiss as well. Yeah, so we all came together as like an international team. In Dubai, we had three trainings together, and then we played on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Dubai. Yeah, I think that was probably one of the most eye-opening experience because, first of all, I was probably the only Asian in that whole Tropic Sevens team, both men and women, and also the smallest player across the whole competition, actually. So that was really like a privilege that I got to be part of Tropic Sevens and to play in Dubai. I think that was still to me, it's still mind-blowing to think about it and to talk about it. Yeah.
So it's like you're not just representing women in what's been a traditionally male sport in rugby, where there is now gender balance. You see yourself as representing maybe Asian women in within the global rugby ecosystem to raise the profile for Asian women's rugby as well, a little bit.
Yeah, quite a little bit. I think the only other team that was kind of Asian is the Hong Kong team. They had like a Hong Kong development team that was playing in the same league as our team. But yeah, I think across all the other clubs, I think I was probably the only Asian, which was exciting because I'm tiny and everyone else is pretty much massive.
But you had a successful tournament, obviously.
Yeah, we made it to the semi-finals, but unfortunately we lost. We were coached by Heather Fisher, which was also a privilege to have her as a coach, having to play the World 7 Series, but she's a retired player now. But yeah, being under her and having all these professional athletes as my teammates, I think it just elevated my whole gameplay. It just gave me a whole new perspective of what sevens really is. Beyond just the Asia side.
Rodney's too humble to say it, but people may not know. Rodney's a bit of a pioneer in rugby in Singapore, and is very heavily involved in grassroots rugby, etc. But so I think, you know, it's worth mentioning that Rodney, your commitment to also growing rugby grassroots, and particularly, you know, I know you talk very fondly and proudly of the work that the club has been able to do in attracting, you know, young women as young as 4 or 5, if I understand correctly. So I just wanted to give credit to Rodney where credit is certainly due to, you know, for him to, I suppose, allow a platform or facilitate a platform for, you know, people like Jane to kind of be involved in, but many others, you know, coming after Jane. I think many young girls who I hope can, you know, represent Singapore and play in all sorts of, you know, big clubs all around the world.
Yeah, we see it as a journey, and I mean, I couldn't inspire anyone to play sport, but Jane certainly can. All I can do is put things in place, which is a platform for Jane to inspire people to play sport and do well. And I'm sure that Jane and I, if we sat down together, we could list 4 or 5 kids on the girls' side who could go some distance in rugby already. So we do have not just a healthy number of young girls and women playing rugby to complement the boys' side, but we also have a number who could go very far in the sport, who will remain nameless. Maybe Jane someday will write it down in a piece of paper and open it 5 years later and see how accurate we are.
No, but I mean, I think it's very important, because I think that's also half the challenge, that you know, many women in sport, not just rugby and other sports, etc., in the past, you know, didn't get the opportunity to play maybe at the high levels because of some of the things that Jane mentioned around having to work, not being paid. And, you know, we're seeing that change in many sports, you know, I think soccer and basketball, etc. And, you know, it's the work that clubs like yours do, Rodney, and the work that you do that kind of just builds that ecosystem so that, you know, we can have maybe in 10, 15 years time, professional rugby players, women rugby players, you know, who can devote themselves to what they love and you know, further the sport even further.
And just to finish off, Jane, what's one thing that you can leave us with? A thought, a motivational line, a reflection on your life, something about International Women's Day? We'll give you the mic for one last time.
Whenever you think you can't, you actually can. So just go out and do it. Yeah, I think just it doesn't matter who it is, right? When you think you can't, you can. Just go and just put yourself out there and do it.
Love
everything
it.
Everything will fall into place.
What a way to finish the week. What a way to finish the week.
When you think you can't, you can.
I think we needed that in the doom and gloom that has been yet another week in this very crazy world. Jane Chan, thank you so much for joining us. Happy International Women's Day. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to be on this year.
And that's been this week's episode of Put Simply. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn at Oroka Group to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and news. Feel free to leave a comment and suggestions on what you'd like to see featured on the podcast as well. Until next time, I'm Erdem Koch.
And I'm Ozan Ibrahim.
Thanks for listening.